When I got within a few feet of the exit, a friendly face peered in at me. "Yaren!" I screamed and squirmed faster to get out of the tunnel. It had been almost a year since I traveled with the woodsmen, Nadia, Pog, and Graykin to wake Kyaer from his magical sleep. I was embraced warmly by the tall, skinny man. It was almost too bright to see, but he looked as I remembered. Dark hair as long as mine, big blue eyes, and a smile that was half smirk on a weathered face. He was accompanied by four men and one woman. They were muscled and powerful-looking, their faces hard and unmoved by my tearful reunion with Yaren. Each wore leather armor, and their long hair was braided with feathers and pieces of bone. I recognized none of them, and upon closer inspection I noticed that they all had matching tattoos on their shoulders of two bears standing upright.
"Yaren?"
Beltor's voice questioned from the cave. I broke my embrace with the woodsman so that he could help my uncle out of the tunnel.
"Duke, it is good to see you,"
Yaren said with a smile.
"Aye, well met, Yaren. So you attacked the ancients?"
"We took care of them."
The five warriors had deep cuts and bloodstains on their armor.
"They were the Empress's elite guard,"
he said after he noticed me inspecting his companions.
"We will leave now,"
one of the men behind Yaren said. His voice was deep and reminded me of Graykin's when he woke from a night of drinking.
"Yes,"
one of the other men said. He was bigger than the rest, as tall as Yaren, but wide across the shoulders. They all seemed to be made of muscles, veins, and various tattoos of clawed teeth and bear art. Even the woman must have weighed as much as my uncle.
"I think I should go. He trusts me,"
Yaren said to his companions.
"No, I've met the Empress and her generals many times. This is more important. The Pretender will come with me now that we have collateral,"
the man with the deep voice said.
"I know you do not believe me, so I will not continue to hammer the point. Just consider the possibility that he is actually the Destroyer and guard your words and actions accordingly."
My tall friend crossed his arms and looked annoyed.
"Your faith in my combat prowess would be insulting if I cared for your opinion."
Yaren didn't smile, but the other men and the woman snickered.
"Fuck it, then."
The lanky woodsman sighed with exasperation and shook his head.
"He's killed a dozen of Fahalda and Alatoric soldiers with ease, but I'm sure you alone will have no problem dragging him from the Empress's camp."
"Kyaer?" I guessed out loud, and they all turned to me. They may have forgotten that my uncle and I just crawled out of the cave because they looked surprised that I had spoken. "Do the ancients have him?" They laughed. It was a weird laughter, as if I was the court jester and I had just fallen on my face. I felt my cheeks turn hot, and I stepped a bit closer to my uncle. His arm wrapped over my shoulders, and I stared down at the ground, away from the strange people with the odd mannerisms. I looked back up when the man with the deep voice turned around and jogged away with another man and the only woman following close behind him. At first they moved carefully around the edge of the pond, but then the trio gained speed and moved between the boulders on the other side of the water. They jumped up then with almost no effort, and by the time the group had ascended the hill toward the road, they were running faster than even a horse could.
"What is so funny?"
Beltor rested his hand on my shoulder, and I felt pressure in his fingertips pull me closer to him. Suddenly, I was afraid again. I knew Yaren, but the other people with him seemed alien. How could six humans defeat four of the Empress's guards? I had heard that a single ancient could kill 10 of our soldiers because of their speed and strength. The way they moved reminded me of Kyaer.
"We laughed because you called them ancients,"
the largest of the remaining men said.
"We call them elvens. We are actually the ancients. Why do I have the feeling that I shouldn't be thanking you for our freedom?"
Beltor's voice was grim, and he fully slid in front of me.
"Relax, Duke Beltor."
Yaren held his hands up, palms facing us, and smiled. The warrior standing behind him gave a cold stare.
"You are safe here. As long as the Empress gives us the man claiming to be Kyaer,"
the large warrior said with a smile. His eyes looked hungry when he gazed at me. They all laughed again, and the sound made me shiver harder than I had in the storm.
Chapter 13 The O'Barney. She wore a hooded cloak that hid most of her features. Her fingertips lightly stroked my face, and I was reminded of the countless times she touched me while we made love. This touch was different. It was exploratory and diagnostic, not affectionate. No, I am not Iola Rothy. She pulled off her hood, and my vision cleared. She was elven, with pale, smooth skin and hair that was as white as fresh snow. I recognized her, but could not recall why. All of them seemed to look the same to me, all of them except for Iola Rothy. "Can you stand?" she asked. I sat up carefully. My broken arm had healed, and I stared at the offered hand for a few seconds before accepting it and her help getting to my feet. On the ground, the corpses of Thayer's three warriors had bathed the salty streets in red. The elven woman had decapitated them, preventing them from healing. She still held her longsword, but when she saw I was coherent, she sheathed it in a smooth, elegant motion. "Come with me, Kyair." She pulled on my hand and led me through the alleys. I heard people screaming about the fires, the death, and the chaos I had caused in the city. I ran after the woman and tried to remember how I knew her. I followed her north through the streets. She knew them well and ducked between buildings to avoid the throngs of people who took to the muddy roads to gawk at the destruction I had wrought. After a few miles, we reached the cliffs above the town. The homes here were finely made. They were large and built with expertly cut and finished stone, and had yards with small gardens. She stopped running at the largest of the homes, and we jumped the 10-foot brick wall that enclosed the perimeter of the property. She opened the thick wood door closest to the garden. The garden was fresh with the scent of tomatoes, onions, thyme, rosemary, and dill. I inhaled deeply, and the scent brought back memories of long nights spent by a fire with Entus during the inception of our army. The door I walked through led to one of the nicest kitchens I had ever seen. It was 30 feet wide and 40 feet long. The floor was smooth green stone, and the counters, shelves, and cabinets were constructed of dark cherry wood. On the north side of the room, a massive brick oven squatted next to an iron stove. Various pots of liquid bubbled on top of the stove. Strong scents of tomato, basil, garlic, and cream kissed my nose. My stomach grumbled, though I had eaten the fish stew earlier. A thin human male stood at a wood counter in the center of the room, chopping a mountain of vegetables with almost military precision. An elven male, his long bronze hair tied up in an elaborate netting, stirred the cooking pots of liquid and checked the contents of the oven. They both turned to look when we entered, but neither seemed surprised. "Wipe your feet," my rescuer commanded. There was a low shelf by the door, holding several pairs of shoes, boots, and sandals. The white-haired elven picked up a brush that hung from a hook on the wall, scraped the salt from her boots, and then took them off to expose gray-specked wool socks. I followed her example with a spare brush hanging from the other wall and removed my shoes. Then she led me through the kitchen into what had once been a large dining room, but now looked like a cartographer's fantasy. Maps covered almost every inch of the wall, and the half-dozen tables set up in the room. A stone fireplace produced a small flame that served as warmth and light for the two elven women and old human male who studied the maps and loose papers intently. As we entered the room, the three glanced up in surprise and hastily sat up straight in their chairs. The women were probably only girls in the elven sense, and they looked almost identical. Long white hair and dark eyes, just like the woman who had saved me. "Leave us," my rescuer commanded. The girls dashed from the table so quickly that the scraps of paper fell onto the floor and scattered like a flock of doves. A few wooden easels were turned away from me, but the elven children's mad scramble out of the room toppled two of them over and spilled their canvas panels to the ground. The old human chuckled and got out of his chair with a slow stutter of thin bones and brittle tendons. There was a cane by his side that he leaned on heavily when he shifted across the jade-colored stone after the girls. As he walked past me, he smiled and nodded in respect. Something about the movement and the sincerity behind his expression made me instantly like him. "Sit." She pointed to a set of chairs at the table farthest from the kitchen. I nodded and made my way to it, choosing the chair that put my back at the wall. She sat opposite me and casually shifted the maps into a pile that she deposited on another table. Before she could scoop all of them up, I realized that they were logistical locations of what I assumed to be elven forces. Planning a counterattack, she smirked and leaned back in her chair to study me. I saw my reflection in the black depths of her eyes. "You are still intimidating, even without your armor. You were at the battle. She was one of Iola Rothi's generals. She had been on the horse behind her when they asked to meet with me. I remembered that she had worn a mask with a black tree on one side and a red star on the other." "Yes," she said softly, and her face contorted into pain. I knew the look from all the elvens I had injured before killing them. The door behind her opened, and the elven cook entered, carrying a massive tray on his thin shoulders. He laid the platter down on the table between us. There were four covered bowls, along with a tan loaf of tangy sourdough bread and a dish of orange honey. A large decanter of white wine accompanied two slender glasses. Without prompting, the elven poured the liquid into each glass. "Thank you," my hostess said to the man. He bowed to her and then me before leaving. "Why are you here?" she asked, once the man exited. He could still hear us. In fact, every elven in this house could hear us. I could easily hear footfalls from the other rooms, hushed whispers about me, and random pangs of kitchen work. "I could ask you the same question." I raised the glass of wine to my lips and was surprised at its peach sweetness. "We are surviving." She gestured to the bowl in front of me and opened her own to reveal the tomato soup that had been cooking over the fire. She picked up a spoon and sipped the soup. Her eyes stayed on me the whole time. "Why are you here?" I sighed and uncovered my soup. I grabbed the spoon and took a careful smell before sipping it. The stew I ate at the Lizard Breaths Inn had been delicious, but this was almost unbelievable. Hidden in the tomato soup were lumps of potato and cuts of bacon that helped offset the sweetness that the red fruit gave to the broth. There was a hint of sourness to the flavor that I guessed came with a gentle mixture of goat's cream. The earlier meal of stew had not really satisfied me, but I predicted that the soup and bread would be satiating. Her teeth ground together, and I tore my attention away from the meal to look back at the white-haired elven. "I am trying to find her," I said with a shrug. "Why?" She stirred her soup, but didn't break eye contact with me. "She ran." I paused and set down the spoon. Then I took a sip of wine to clean my throat before continuing. "I told her I would follow her to the base of the northern mountains. I was delayed by a few months, and when I finally got there, she was long gone." The woman nodded and reached for her spoon. She took her eyes off me and concentrated on eating for a few minutes. I finished the tomato-potato soup and cleaned the bowl with a chunk of the bread. It tasted as tart as it looked and smelled. The second bowl was peppered grilled fish over a green, moss-like vegetable. A first bite confirmed my suspicions. It tasted as good as the soup. Thank you for the food. It had been a long time since I thanked an elven for anything. I remembered that Thayer and our group of human soldiers had been required to thank the asshole that trained and tortured us. The woman grunted and downed the rest of her wine in a long gulp. Why did you save me? I glanced at the maps on the closest table. It was of the entire continent. Red circles looked to be troop placement, and there were a few score of marks by what I knew were now major settlements for humans. I also saw half a dozen green circles in parts of the wilderness that I knew were far from any civilization. She thinks you are dead. What? My sister. She thinks you were killed by your people. She knows someone is following her, and she believes it is a hunting squad from Shlara or Alexia's army. Your sister? Both pieces of information surprised me. I hadn't guessed that Iola Rothi thought I was dead, and I never knew she had a sibling. I thought she was the only child of the chieftain, which was why she held so much power in the tribe. Yes. Her gaze was emotionless, but my mind continued to spin. I never saw you in her stables. I never heard of you. What is your name? Naya Rothi is my name. We shared mothers, but not fathers. I am junior to Iola Rothi, and our mother was the chieftain of the Gentilist tribe. I nodded as the pieces fell into place in my mind. Alexia had handled most of the interrogations of elven prisoners, and I had heard the name Naya Rothi several times. Her forces were the elven's equivalent of Alexia's troops, light infantry and scouts. The Gentilist tribe was much larger than the Laxiel tribe, and their lands sat a few months' ride away. It wasn't common knowledge amongst the Laxiel tribe, she continued, as I nodded to her statements. Their skin was the same shade of alabaster, and I noticed other resemblances now that I knew. Their ears had the same shape, as did her eyes and mouth. I found myself staring at her lips, and I had to tear myself away and focus on the remaining part of the meal. "Where is she?" I finally asked. "Not here," Naya Rothi almost sneered, but seemed to hold back her bubbling emotion. For a half second, I thought about reaching across the table, grabbing on to her slender throat or long white hair, and then smashing her face against the wooden floor of the room until she gave me the answer. I would kill her afterward and then destroy every other elven in this house before I left. I sighed and dropped my fork into the bowl of half-eaten salad. Then I leaned back and rubbed my eyes in an effort to push away the hate, the pain, the frustration. The elven who sat across the table from me was sister to the woman I loved. She had just saved my life. I had done enough to the elvens. I had avenged my father and brother's deaths. Then I had freed my kind. Naya Rothi's people were nothing but mice scurrying around the cellar in fear of the Obarni. There was no reason for me to continue with my eradication. I just wanted to find Iola Rothi and live the rest of my life with her. "Can you tell me where I can find her, please? Naya Rothi had saved me for a reason. She had to have enormous hatred and fear of me, yet she had brought me back to her home, endangering herself and her children." Perhaps, Naya Rothi smiled and took another small spoonful of her soup. It was the first glimpse of emotion I had seen from her. "I get the feeling you didn't save me for your sister's sake." "Correct." I heard movement upstairs, a few footfalls, and then a short, hissing whisper that sounded like it could be one of the girls. I focused on listening for a few seconds and found the quick heartbeats of the two girls, the slow beat of the old man, the human and elven in the kitchen, and then another 5 elvens in various rooms. The thought of so many of them around me made me uneasy. "What do you want?" I finished the rest of my fish and pushed away the bowl. "A favor for a favor." The white-haired woman smirked for a second, and the expression reminded me too much of her sister. "You know of Jespur?" I nodded. It was a land to the northwest, some 4,000 miles away. There is a settlement of our kind west of there, nestled between the 2 forked river and the Moon Mountain Range. It will be easy for you to find once you know where to look. "Why?" I asked, unable to hide the annoyance from my voice. If I could fly as a crow, it would take me months to get there. But I would have to hunt, evade detection, and cross 6 mountain ranges. It would be a tough journey that would take time away from my main objective for at least 6 months. "I need you to take them written orders and supplies. Once you complete the task, they will tell you where Iola Rothi is." Was she not just here? I thought I was on her tail, maybe a few weeks behind her. I felt frustration rising in my stomach, and my head started to hurt. "It is a fair trade, no?" Nya Rothi sat back and folded her arms. "Answer my question," I hissed through my teeth. "She is en route to them now. Perhaps you can catch her if you move quickly enough." She smiled, and I couldn't tell if she was lying. It was easy with humans. Our pulse or breathing changed. Elven hearts had a different cadence than ours, and the beats never seemed to reveal anything. I felt my mood swing past the point of no return, and I stopped thinking clearly. "Was she not just here?" I slammed my fist on the table, and the legs shattered into dozens of pieces. The thick piece of wood buckled and crashed to the floor. The papers, flatware, glasses, and the remains of our meal scattered on the floor in a symphonic dissonance of surprise. "You fucking idiot. It will take us a day to sort through this now before you can..." I cut off her voice abruptly with my right hand. It hooked around her throat, cradled her chin, and then supported her body when I slammed it into the wooden wall by the stairs. Nya Rothi had been so calm throughout this whole conversation, but I knew the look of terror in their eyes. She now remembered who she had invited into her home. "Was she just here?" I asked slowly. Her feet hung off the ground, but the force of my push must have stunned her. I heard voices of alarm from upstairs and in the kitchen. The room would be flooded with her guards in a few seconds, and I could begin to kill. I pulled the earth into my body, and my blood rushed through my heart. How long had it been since I killed an elven? "Too long." "I saved you," she whispered through a crushed windpipe. Her hands clutched at my forearm, but it was no use. She might be strong for an elven, but I carried a strength that was beyond her imagination. She could have gone for her sword, or the dagger on the other side, but she must have correctly guessed that I would pop her head off of her fragile neck quicker than she might bring the weapons to use. "Now it appears that you are in my way," I said. My voice sounded like I had the helmet of my demon armor over my head. Her black eyes looked away from mine and toward the dark wooden floor. I saw something in the depths that halted my anger. Shouts rang out in the room as the household ran down the stairs. Her guards had short swords but no bows, and none of them were wearing armor. If one of them made a move, I would kill her before they got to me. Then I could easily disarm the first one and paint the maps on the wall with their thick blood. "I'm sorry," Nya Rothi whispered. She still wasn't looking at me, and I couldn't keep my eyes from darting to where she focused. It was the stack of framed canvas that fell from the easel when the children ran. One of the cream-colored squares had landed face up, and I saw an image drawn on it with charcoal. What is this sketch? My hand released its grip on Nyarothi's throat, and she dropped to the ground with a gasp. I walked over to the other side of the room and picked up the canvas square. I didn't know much about art, but the drawing was done with an amazing amount of detail. My hair was now longer, and I had neglected to shave my beard, but the face on the canvas was mine. The portrayal was good enough to make me wonder if I had actually posed for the portrait at some point in my life and forgotten. "I am fine. Leave us," Nyarothi ordered her guards. I glanced at them over the canvas in my hand, and they looked like angry kittens, ready to pounce. Who did this? I was more curious than angry now. She gave her sentries a hard look, and they walked up the stairs. I was smiling in the picture. When was the last time I felt that emotion? I had faked my smile many times in my travels since I murdered Shlara. "Iolarothi," she said once I heard the guards enter their rooms and close the doors. I was sure they could still hear us. "You missed her by 3 weeks." She began to pick up the discarded bowls and flatware. One of the humans from the kitchen poked his head through the door and ran to assist her, but she shooed him away. Why did she draw this? I stared at the image again, and my head spun. She had just been here. I was holding something she had created. She knew my face well enough to craft this from memory. I felt emotion in my chest, and I tried to force it down into my stomach. I suddenly wished I had the talent to draw an image of her on canvas using simple charcoal. Malik would have laughed. I had always told him how useless art was, and he tried to convince me otherwise many times. "It doesn't matter. I said before that she thinks you are dead. Why didn't you tell me sooner that she was just here? I asked you several times, and you tried to be clever." The anger I felt a few seconds ago had vanished. Now all I felt was sadness and frustration that Iolarothi believed I was dead. If she knew, she would stop evading me, and we could be together. "I was not sure of your intentions." She lifted a tray, neatly stacked with the dishes and glasses we had just used. "I am still not sure. Wait here." She walked the tray into the kitchen, and I heard her tell her servants that she was okay, and that we would require no more food from them tonight. "Are those girls your daughters?" I asked when Nyarothi walked back into the room. I gestured to the papers scattered on the ground by the table I had just crushed. "Yes," she said, after a careful hesitation. She was probably afraid that I might attack them. I had killed many of their children in my genocide. "They look like you." I knelt down and helped her gather the various papers that I had scattered across the floor. Only about a quarter of them had soup splattered across them, but they were all still readable. I was correct earlier when I guessed that these were logistic tracking forms. Nyarothi was moving bodies, food, and weapons between the makeshift settlements where her people hid. I would have thought her operation would have been located centrally on the continent, but perhaps Nyarothi was cunning enough to realize this and had hidden herself here on purpose. "They look like their father," she said with sadness. I looked up at her, but she was busy with her own pile and did not spare me a glance. I didn't want to ask her where their father was. He had probably died during the last battle. Such was war, death, sadness, and loss for the vanquished. "I will take your documents to Jespur." She looked up and nodded with a slight smile. "Do you have supplies to spare?" "I have some. I'll have them ready by tomorrow morning. We have a room you can use if you wish to rest for the evening. There was no trace of resentment from her for the destruction I had just caused, but I could still see sadness in her dark eyes. My kind won't be looking for me in the city? No, there were only 4 in Dead Flats, and the guards won't bother with a detailed investigation. For the past 4 years, we've come to expect your kind to switch out a team of 4 or 5 every 10 months. That group just arrived 5 weeks ago. One of Alexia's couriers comes through every 2 months, but I'll make sure they don't leave here with any news. I nodded and tried to force down the anger. The thought of Nyarothi killing any of my people made me sick to my stomach, but I had justified similar sins in the last decade. I will rest, then. I should have stayed up through the night in hopes that Nyarothi would tell me more of Iolarothi's whereabouts or hint at whatever strategy she was orchestrating across the world. Perhaps I could have asked her more about her daughters, or had her describe the situation that made Iolarothi want to draw a picture of my face. But my body and mind were exhausted from endless travel through the wastelands. I couldn't remember the last time I had slept in a bed without worrying that the Obarni would break down the door to the room and capture me. The thought of letting my worries slip away was irresistible, even in the bosom of my sworn enemy. Up the stairs, 3rd door on the left. I'll have servants prepare a bath for you if you will wait a few minutes. She smiled coyly as I struggled to say no and finally nodded. A bath sounded worth the wait, and she must have guessed how long I'd been traveling. I am intrigued as to why you are helping me, I said, as I stood up from the floor and laid another small stack of papers on an adjacent table. If she thinks I am dead, she wouldn't have asked you to assist me. I am not helping you. She tossed her hair back and snorted in disgust. You just saved me from capture and death. Then you brought me back to your home, offered me a meal, a bath, and a safe place to sleep, all after I lost my temper and attacked you. Are you helping Iolarothi? My hopes soared at the thought of seeing her again. Just saying her name was wonderful. No, Nyarothi almost spat, and I wondered if she was angry at her sister for the same reasons my people were pursuing me. Iolarothi's entanglement with me must seem like a betrayal. Why, then? I asked in sincerity. That is enough for tonight. Perhaps we will meet in another life. We can share another meal, and I can tell you about all of the people I loved, who you slaughtered. For tonight, just know that I have my own reasons for aiding you. She glared at me, and it reminded me too much of her sister. That look normally meant a horse or human servant was about to die. Fine. Good night, Nyarothi. Good night, Kyair. She returned to her papers and left me to ascend the stairs, take my bath, and ponder the journey ahead. Chapter 14 Kyair. You are late for dinner. Viernine's voice shook me from my memory. I was soaking in the bath, in my prison tent, in the belly of Empress Talaxthe's army camp. Or was I in Dead Flats still, sitting in the warm water Nyarothi's servants brought to my room in a copper tub? My mind ached for a moment, and I rubbed my eyes to force the grogginess away. The last of the sun's red light dripped into my tent. Viernine brought her usual entourage of green-armored female guards who glared at me with open hostility. It had been 3 days since I lunched with the Empress and her generals. In that time, I had not seen Viernine, Islata, or anyone besides 3 elvens tasked with bringing me food and bath water daily. They refused to speak to me. I guessed that the isolation was part of the Empress's strategy. Even their kind needed frequent social contact. She probably thought that the solitary confinement would make me more willing to succumb to her demands. But I was used to being alone, and I had spent the time exercising and sorting through my memories. I had also finalized a plan which would ensure Talaxthi's failure and my escape. The bathwater was almost cold now. I had been soaking for some time. The water had triggered a memory that took me back to Dead Flats. I got out of the tub slowly so that Vir9's guards would not startle, and dried myself carefully with a clean towel. "Have you thought about the Empress's proposal?" Vir9 asked flatly. She was the exact opposite of Islata, both in temperament and appearance. Vir9 was as cool and calm as her dark pewter hair, never revealing anything in her words or expressions. Her golden-haired counterpart was mercurial, swinging from different mental spectrums in a wild, spinning dance that was apparent to anyone around her. I wondered how they could stand each other. "I have. I put on the undergarments the servants brought, and then donned the green pants. And?" I smiled for a second while the matching green tunic covered my head. I laced up the chest opening before looking Vir9 in her ruby eyes. "I'd prefer not to let your guards know all my secrets. Maybe they should leave?" "That is not possible, O'Barney." She crossed her arms, and I detected a faint annoyance in her voice. "Too bad. I would enjoy some time alone with you." I smirked at her. "We have never been alone together, O'Barney." The woman smiled, and I realized it was true. In the castle, I had always been with Islata and Vir9 together, and she never came to escort me without her guards. "Afraid I will harm you if we are alone?" "Maybe it is for your own protection." She laughed slightly, and I cracked a matching smile. I understood little of their military hierarchy, but it seemed that Vir9 was part of Alatoric's army, yet also served the Empress directly. She wore the Empress's colored armor, and her hair and eyes were the same hue as Talaxthi's other guards. "You'll have to wait for me to tell the Empress, then. Will you be joining us for this meal?" "Perhaps." She motioned to the guards, and two of them walked to the tent flap. "Do you wish me to be there?" She raised an eyebrow in interest and uncrossed her arms. "Sure." I tried to read her face, but she exhibited no pleasure from my response. "Is there anyone else you wish to attend?" She licked her lips, and there was something that flashed in her red eyes. I stopped walking toward the exit of the tent mid-stride and thought about Islata. If I invited the golden-haired elven, I would not be able to mention anything about my suspicions of Talaxthi's daughter. Islata had met Nadia, and I could only guess that she had not made the connection between my friend and the Empress. Why would she? Nadia was a human, and Talaxthi was the leader of the entire elven nation. But I knew that Nadia was part elven. I knew that she had been abandoned through the Radical and adopted by Duke Beltor. She looked too much like Talaxthi for it to be a coincidence. Vir9 hinted at something I had not considered. What if she knew about the arrangement that Islata and I made? Did that mean the Empress knew? Islata seemed to have ridden a fine line between a political power play with me and betraying her own people. She wanted more time with the Empress and saw me as a way to get it. She may have thought that Nadia wasn't important to the Empress and could be sacrificed for some loyalty from me. Maybe Talaxthi and Alatoric had instructed Islata to come to me with this proposition in the first place. Perhaps the whole endeavor was a ruse to see if I could be trusted. Islata should come. I wanted her at the last meeting. I couldn't rule out any of the possibilities. Not asking her to come could be seen as me backing out of my agreement with Islata. If the Empress knew of it, she might not believe that I could be trusted to deliver her to the Radical. I'd figure out another way to leverage Nadia if needed. Good. I will speak to the Empress about your request. Virnine nodded and looked pleased. Was I playing into their hands? I suddenly wished for my armor, shield, mace, horse, and two armies divided by a line of skirmish. Battles were so much easier than this intrigue. I stepped out of the tent and into the red rays of the setting sun. Twilight was an hour away, but the avenue was as active as at dawn. I had amused myself every few hours by listening to the comings and goings in the camp. My eavesdropping gave me little information beyond what I had already guessed. The army had not set hooks into the city yet because they were still investigating the strange explosion that had decimated one side of the castle. They didn't want to risk any of their kind, especially the Empress, until the researchers were sure of what caused the incident. Virnine touched my arm lightly, and we began to walk down the packed dirt road toward the center of the colored grid of tents. Most of the elvens we passed paid no attention to my entourage. A few gave us a puzzled look. I assumed the elven soldiers did not realize that I was an Obarni. I certainly did not look like one. I had put on some weight since being awoken, but I was nowhere near as bulky and stout as a typical heavily muscled Obarni. There were other humans walking through the paths in Naya soldier uniforms, so aside from my clothes and escort, I was not particularly conspicuous. The organization of the camp had felt familiar when I first observed it. Now that I knew the Empress divided her army in the same way I had, with the same number of generals, the structure of the massive camp was clear. I felt confident I could make my own way to her pavilion and even find her generals' tents without assistance. "Have you finished moving all of your kind to this world?" I inquired. "I am not party to such plans." I nodded at Virnine, even though I felt like she was lying. Me neither. That was why I asked. I smiled at her, and she only returned a slight frown. It had been cold yesterday, and the night brought an angry rainstorm, but this day was significantly warmer than any in the previous week. I had not yet experienced spring on this world, but it seemed like it might begin any day now. My mind drifted away for a bit and wondered about how the Radical had been created. Who designed it? How did it know of the other worlds? Did all the worlds have the same four seasons? What caused the seasons? Was it the power of the earth on the world, the oceans, the sun, the moon? I recalled the intricate map I saw in the ruins beneath Castle Naya. It looked like an impossibly huge spiderweb that glowed with the magic of the ovule I placed in the Radical. Had my people finally figured out how to use the device and left my birth world, or had humans always inhabited these worlds? "You look pensive, Obarni," Virnine commented at my side as my thoughts began to give me a headache. "I'm thinking of friends long gone." I shrugged my shoulders and gestured to the surrounding camp. They wouldn't believe this. My tent sat in an area surrounded by Alatoric's colored tents, but when I finished my sentence, we had reached sandy-colored tents. They flew brown and red flags above them, and I assumed they were the green-haired General DeSanti's colors, from the outfit she had worn the last time we met. "Tell me more. I do not understand what you mean." Virnine's eyes opened slightly, and she licked her lips like a snake. "They would be surprised that I am a prisoner in an elven camp. They would be amazed at how calm I am now. I laughed and tried to hold back the flood of memories. Thayer, Malik, Shlara, Alexia, Gorbani, and I had spent countless hours over some 30 years creating a war machine capable of freeing our people from generations of slavery. In that time, we had become closer than family. Maybe it was fitting that I was here. I had betrayed the one person who loved me more than I loved myself. If Jesme was correct, and our family and friends took on a spirit form to watch over us when they died, then Shlara and my other generals would probably be enjoying the poetic justice of my end coming at the hands of this Empress. I couldn't worry about my past anymore. I was needed too much in the present. You said they were long gone. What do you mean? We entered an area of white tents and black flags. We had only another few minutes to walk. Dead. At least I hope so, I said, as half a dozen elven men and women, clad in ebony, with hair of various metallic colors tied back in elaborate braids, mixed with black or white beads, walked past us. It was the first group to eye me with surprise and then anger. It seemed that some of the troops did know who I was. Human friends. On this world, Vir-9 turned her attention toward 10 red-uniformed warriors walking past us. I sensed tension between my guards and Yillamar's troops, but none of them looked at me as they passed. They don't seem to like you. I changed the subject. Most don't like the Empress's elite, Vir-9 replied. What does that mean? You all have to color your eyes red and put gray paint in your hair? Vir-9 smiled at me, and a few of her guards gave me a sidelong glance. We are the Empress's chosen soldiers, the best warriors, tacticians, and element users. Vir-9's voice filled with rare pride. I can recall Islata telling me that she is the best elven warrior alive. She said it several times, actually. I chuckled, and Vir-9 laughed a little with me. My friend is very boastful, but she is not entirely incorrect. Islata is quite notorious amongst our people. Perhaps there is none in our army that is her better, but she rarely engages in the type of combat that would pit her skills against our other warriors. This was interesting to me. I never saw Islata do more than behead Nanos's guard. She had been fast, but her opponent had practically been defenseless. But the Empress chooses us because of potential only she can see. Then we are entrusted to her for training and tutelage. We serve her because of the love she shows us. Vir-9's tone reminded me of Islata when she spoke of Talaxthi. They both seem to have complete adoration for their leader. So the Empress has an army, but an additional private army within? Seems redundant. We approached the green tents. Do you recall our Empress telling you how she studied the destroyer? Vir-9 looked at me with a pewter eyebrow raised above her ruby eyes, and I nodded back. Perhaps he would have lived a few years longer if there had been a more loyal force between him and the rest of his army. The Empress fears one of her generals will try to overthrow her. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. No, of course not. But I'm sure that the destroyer did not have those fears either. She won't make the same mistakes he did. Wait here, O'Barney. We reached the clearing before the Empress's tent. I nodded to Vir-9 and thought about what she had said while she walked across the clearing and down into the large white pavilion. I hadn't needed a personal army loyal to me because I had 5 generals who were my best friends. I trusted my life to them too many times to count. They would never have betrayed me. I had betrayed them. If I had known I was capable of killing Shlara, would I have raised my own army to protect myself? My stomach turned at the idea of planning to murder my best friend and then using loyal soldiers to protect myself afterward. Soldiers who trusted me. Soldiers who believed I was the best hope for our entire race. I had made a mistake in the midst of fear and passion. As much as I hated myself for what I had done, I knew I would have never been able to plot such an act of betrayal and treason. I would have sooner killed myself than allow it to happen, if I had known. Vir-9's green armored guards certainly didn't seem like an elite force. They were as skittish around me as a wild stallion about to be neutered. They exchanged too many sideways glances with each other and tensed up whenever I shifted my weight slightly. Alatoric's soldiers had acted the same way. It was true that they were not as strong as me or as fast, but the six of them could easily defeat me if they wanted. I wondered for a few minutes if the Empress gave some directive that I was to be unharmed, and her guards were nervous that they might have to disobey her and kill me if I became aggressive. I had not figured out why she always sent women to guard me. Did they believe I would not kill one of their females? I almost laughed at the idea. In Naya, I had killed both the male and female assassins who ambushed me. In my army, men and women had trained and fought and died as equals. The same was true of the Elvens. Naya seemed to have some cultural differences between how men and women were treated. Nadia was expected to wear dresses and pursue gentler interests than a man, though these mores had not seemed to influence or stop her from doing what she wanted. Yet even in Naya, women were regular members of their army and did not seem to be held to different standards. Perhaps Talaxthi trusted her female soldiers more, or they just happened to be the most capable. 10 minutes passed, then another. Finally, the sun sunk behind the distant slope in the west that hid the ocean from the city. The sky turned from amber to a blood red that splashed the horizon like a spilled glass of wine. The slide into evening brought a light, chilly wind that reminded me of the last night's storm. The breeze carried the scent of water, clovers, and rosemary. Vir-9 emerged from the tent a few minutes after the sun set. She beckoned to me, and my circle of guards took me across the clearing to the mouth of the pavilion. Talaxthi's sentries roughly patted my tunic and pants in search of weapons. When they were satisfied, Vir-9 nodded her head to me and walked down the small series of wood steps into the belly of Talaxthi's dwelling. The pavilion had not changed since the last time I was here. The Empress and her generals were sitting in the same places as our previous meeting, wearing the colors of their individual banners. The main difference was that the wide area was now bathed in soft lantern light from 10 silver-wrought lamps that hung from the support beams of the pavilion. The lanterns were etched with entwined vines, delicate leaves, and exquisite images of the sun and moon. Each shade was made of a thin pink silk that seemed to deaden the harshness of the flame behind it, while at the same time enhancing the fire's presence. The other change to the room was Islata. She sat at her general's right hand, on the outskirts of the circle. She wore a form-fitting pair of gold wool leggings and a matching tunic instead of the leather and chain armor she usually wore. The blouse had blue stars embroidered below where the collar of the shirt parted to reveal the peach-tinted skin of her cleavage. Her sword sat sheathed on the ground between her and Alatoric. The cold stare she gave made me wonder if she was intent on drawing the blade. The O'Barney, Viernine announced, with a flatness that came with stating the obvious. Please sit down, Kyer. The Empress gestured to the small pillow positioned 40 feet in front of her. The seat was closer than it had been 3 days before, and I wondered if this was a way of showing that they were beginning to trust me. I could close the gap from sitting to ripping the beautiful head off of her shoulders in less than a second. Thank you, I nodded, and forced a smile to my face while I kneeled on the pillow. Viernine took her position a few feet behind Talaxthi, and she licked her lips slightly while she glanced around the tent at the other half-dozen guards. I took a deep breath of the pine, lavender, and sage scents that filled the pavilion. Then I studied the woman who looked too much like Nadia. The Empress wore a cream-colored robe made of reflective satin fabric. It seemed to glow in the warm light of the hanging lamps. Across the surface of the robe spun green and gold-colored embroidery of tree roots. They twisted and turned across the Empress's clothes like they were alive. I imagine that the back of the garment probably displayed the full trunk and branches of the tree. I almost asked her to turn around so I might see the full beauty of the design. She wore her hair down loose, except for a braided section that ran threaded through half a dozen small golden bells. I was lucky that she didn't have her hair tied back as Nadia always did. The similarities between the two women would have been likely to cloud my judgment. I was not worried about her using my sense of smell to control me again, but that didn't mean that the Empress had no other powers at her disposal. I would like to apologize for the long wait between our meetings. I am sure you can guess at the demands my role places upon me. It is no excuse, of course, but I would like to make it up to you tonight. She smiled coyly, and Alatoric's mouth curled up into a matching grin. All of her other generals and Islata stared at me intently, save for the red-clothed Yillamar. The large elven looked terribly bored. Good. I've been pretty horny since you played that little trick on me. I guessed it would only be a matter of time before I got to fuck you. A hiss went through the room as if 1,000 snakes were lit on fire. My heart skipped a beat as the faces of the gathered generals and guards turned into one of absolute malice. Like rabid dogs, they crouched forward, hands on weapons, faces turned toward me with long teeth exposed and snarling. The change was so sudden and swift, it was as if they acted as one animal, one life form, and only one elven in the tent maintained her composure. The Empress let out a loud and mirthful laugh. It came from her belly and echoed in her shoulders and throat. After almost 10 seconds of her laughing, the rest of her kind seemed to realize that she wasn't upset. Then the tension in the room returned to what it was before I made my vulgar comment. "You are quite bold, Kyer." The Empress finally sucked in enough air to get a phrase out of her pretty mouth. Her laughter did sound pleasant, like Nadia's, but a few pitches higher and of a clearer timbre. The elvens facing me seemed to relax at Talaxthi's words. Those seated leaned back onto their cushions. The guards at the sides of the tent lowered their small crossbows and exhaled with obvious regret. Islata set her thick bladed sword down on the wood planks of the pavilion and gave me an exasperated look before she smiled the way she did when she was in the mood to rip my clothes off and fuck me. I can see why Islata enjoys you. Talaxthi must have noticed the gaze Islata gave me. The other generals turned to glance over at Alatoric's commander, but she didn't break eye contact with me or seem intimidated by their attention. I find it odd how you have created unique relationships with some of our warriors. It is normally not acceptable for your kind to be involved so with ours. Perhaps the words from your mouth do not correlate to the actions of your body. Alatoric was hard to read, with such a large smile always painted on his face, but I got the feeling he was angered by the attention Islata had just received. I knew from